You're listening to Managing Leadership Anxiety, Yours and Theirs, a podcast offered in partnership with Missio Alliance. Each episode, we discuss internal and relational pressures, how they block effective leadership, and how we can move through them to a greater health. And now your host, Steve Cuss.
Friends, we are now two episodes into our fresh season of Managing Leadership Anxiety, and as is often the case in the down season, we pick up a ton of new listeners. So if you are new to the podcast, we've been around since actually 2018. We're coming up on 5 years, which is just mind-blowing. And we do something unusual, but we think it's pretty powerful. We teach you to notice and locate anxiety. Now, on the surface, that just sounds like, what? But what we're helping you notice is this a particular kind of anxiety called reactivity. Now, a lot of people, especially a lot of leaders, when they think of anxiety, they think of the words worry and fear. And so they opt themselves out. They say, well, I'm not an anxious person, so don't worry about it. But when we help you realize that anxiety is actually reactivity, so when you're judging someone, when you're irritated, when you're irritable, okay, now we're talking. This is the only kind of anxiety that's contagious. This is the kind of anxiety that makes people leave their jobs. People don't really leave job descriptions as much as they leave managers. And then this is also the anxiety we run into, of course, in the home place. Now, this season, at least for the first several episodes, we are really focusing on the ways that reactivity and anxiety affect your relationship with God. This is technically a homegrown episode. I'm joined by my wife, Lisa. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, good to be here.
And also Capable Life coach and trainer, Jimmy Carnes.
Yeah, hey, Steve, happy to be here.
Jimmy, you were on the last season, one of the last, I think, episodes we did last season. And so we'll be kind of digging into some of your tools today, but we've gone back, what, 11 or 12 years at this point, I think it was.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
2011, 2012?
2012.
2012 was when we started. Jimmy came on board part-time as a worship leader, helped us build and move into a church building after being portable. That was kind of your, and mine, frankly, baptism of fire.
That's right.
I remember being in the building as it was still being built, calling you saying, I don't know if we have enough money to finish this building. Do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are good times.
Yeah.
It's nice to be able to smile and laugh about it now.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And then very early on, you were in my first ever class when I attempted to teach this stuff, and then very quickly became a coach and now a trainer and now full-time with Capable Life.
Yeah.
So we'll be digging into your tools today, but before we do just wish to light a candle. Even though it's an audio podcast, what we find with our listeners is they take this chance to themselves just take a breath. What's kind of entertaining about this candle is I started the season on a bang with an upgraded lighter, a technologically USB lighter, and it's failed me today.
We're going back to
old school.
Old school.
The old sound. But we just light this candle, the three of us here together, by faith, as we relax into God's presence, as we remember that with everything we're carrying and everything that has a hold of us, that God is with us. And so if you're on a treadmill right now or out for a walk or driving, we invite you just to do the same. It can just take 10 seconds. One of the easiest things you can do is just take a deeper than normal breath or be more intentional about your breath. And maybe for you, it's remembering that God is as close to you as the air you breathe. So, Jimmy, before we get into some of your tools, maybe just give us a little bit of your history with Capable Life and these tools. I know you shared quite a bit before, but that was last season. So just a brush up, what got you into this?
Yeah, I mean, like you just mentioned a minute ago, I was a part of your first class to try and figure out whether this stuff that you learned in chaplaincy could be taught in a different environment. And the answer was yes, it could. It was material that completely kind of transformed the way that I show up as a leader and as a father and as a human being. And really the biggest piece of that is I had no idea how much of what I was doing was automatic. Right. There was a lot of me that was just happening before I could even think to react. I was already reacting. And I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is learning to create space between my initial automatic reaction and actually incorporating a choice or a decision in that. And it made a huge difference. I mean, obviously it's something that I continue to work on. You never graduate from this, But to be able to focus on the fact that we do have some agency in the way that we show up to ourselves and to a group makes a huge difference.
I love that. Can you give us an example of how you create space?
Ooh, so this candle for me is huge. I think I actually mentioned it last episode as well, but I am somebody who I clench up. So when I'm worried or I'm anxious, I just shut down. And so for me, that deep breath, reminding myself that I'm not alone here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm here with you guys, but also here with God. Yes. And for me, it's been absolutely life-changing to just that one breath can make all the difference. And me stumbling over my words to then suddenly allowing God to speak through me. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a weird thing, but it works.
It's powerful.
Yeah. We talk about there's a stimulus and a response. Mm. And then in between the stimulus and response, there's this gap. Mm. And it does feel like, Jimmy, it's the early experience of our students is minding that gap, is noticing that how much they're on autopilot. And how do they begin to pause and notice? Mm. While we're just talking about it, does anything come to mind for either of you of a simple noticing tool? This is sometimes the hardest thing for our first students, right? Noticing anxiety, noticing reactivity. Maybe we're just going to go around the table and each of us share, okay, here's one thing I do to notice. We've already mentioned the candle. What else comes to mind?
Hi. Go ahead.
I take stock of my body. I'm one who my body is telling me that I'm anxious before my brain knows it. And so I carry it in my shoulders. Actually, right now, you can probably, I feel like I've got a Batman suit on because my neck is about to lock up. Yeah. I don't have full motion. And so it's those kind of symptoms. It's like, okay, what is going on? Like, what are you carrying? And so it's both a long-term and a short-term thing. I'll be eating cereal in the morning and my shoulders will be raised. And just sometimes it's actually my wife that notices and pushes them down, but I've gotten better at taking stock of my own body and figuring out what I'm carrying with me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm similar to that. I have to do body checks when I'm aware, but when I'm not, I carry it a lot in my shoulders and neck. So I've often had people tell me, like, I see you touch your neck a lot. And so without realizing it. So one of the things I've started doing is imagining this whole idea of the breath of God and the peace of God when I touch my neck to be put in that area of my body and to allow it just to flow through. Mm-hmm. But it starts with feeling discomfort as a trigger in order to remember, I'm in human in need of a savior. And a savior that is available. You know, it's the beginning of it. It's not all on me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll tackle a deeper one just since I think we had two really good initial ones, but there's also a way you can notice by knowing your ongoing proclivities, right? And yep. We all three of us deal with these. And mine is, even after all these years, is the feeling of stupidity. Mm. And if I have a number of things where I feel incompetent, my capacity to manage just diminishes massively. And the last time that happened was like, what, 2 hours ago, three hours ago?
Yes.
Where not just over the course of this week, I've had to do a number of things I'm not very good at. But this morning, here's a simple example. I bought a Sauda brand bookcase. And because I'm somewhat cheap, half of it is used and half of it is new. So the used one shows up and it's not in great condition, but I don't want to return it because I can't get it all back in the box. It's literally that reason. So I look at the parts, a couple of them are damaged, but I think to myself, well, I think those damaged parts will be hidden by the wall. I'm going to go ahead and build it. But all of the labels had fallen off this used equipment, and I'm trying to guess which part goes where. Well, I don't know how many hours I've spent building it, but I've got two parts backwards and they're glued and it's done. And now I just go and that was like for me the straw that broke the camel's back this morning. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the things we're saying is I actually am quite proud of myself for noticing it and taking care of it rather than just pushing through. That's what you guys are saying with your shoulders as well. This is a lot of the early journey we have.
I will say you showed up this morning and said, this is what happened. I'm owning this. I feel stupid that this happened. But it happened. And for me with that, sometimes if I don't bring in the awareness, it can take over me for weeks. Yeah. And I live out of, I am stupid and shouldn't have, and all the shoulds and oughts. Yeah. And that the beauty of this work, and whether it's the spinning mind where that thought is going again and again, or whether it's something that's held in the body, it does over time speed up our ability to notice it and to be able to move into it and through it.
Yeah. Yeah. And naming it is such an important piece. It's quite humbling to have to say out loud, but as soon as I say it out loud, I have control over it.
Yeah. And we all have coping mechanisms, right? Yes. That whether we address it or not, well, usually if we don't address it, then our automatic coping mechanisms kick in, and they usually are not very effectual. Yes. Right? So that naming it can really just break the trajectory, so that it doesn't fix it. Yeah. You know, it's not like, oh, now that I named it, it's not bothering me anymore, mm-hmm. but it does get us off that automatic track of our coping mechanism mm-hmm. that, like you said, can last for weeks or months, or sometimes you can carry something your whole life. Yes. So it gives us a new option, right? Another path.
It's like it costs, but it costs less than not naming it. That's the way I think about it. Like, it cost me something to say to Lisa, here's what I've done, I feel like an idiot. Mm-hmm. But it sure cost a lot less than me pushing forward, or what I was tempted to do is blame the people that sent me a damaged
I
news
caught
package,
that. Yeah. So
which
good.
Is true. They have some culpability.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I chose to try to build it, and then now it's on me. So if we're going to get really detailed, I actually went on a chat with Amazon to explain what happened, to say, I don't know if I deserve a refund or not. And I'd be happy to update our audience next week once they get the package back.
Yeah. You said something, though, that I don't want to skip over too fast, and it's that it cost you something.
Yeah.
And usually the pathway towards relief is this acute increased pain, right? That we're used to managing pain in our own ways, but usually that's in some stuffing or blaming or hiding that takes a lot longer. And so it feels like it's less pain over a longer amount of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And usually the pathway towards relief is oftentimes being willing to deal with that acute pain so that you can have relief either quicker or more sustainable. I think that's a big deal.
I love it. Yeah. What systems theory calls an attempted solution, right? Yeah. If I'm not willing to do it, I just enter into an attempted solution that makes it all worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this podcast started out as a leadership podcast. It still very much is. But this season, we really are focusing on our relationship with God, because especially for a leader, I guess our heart cry is we want leaders to enjoy the God they proclaim to others. And we find that's a big struggle. All of us have been in Christian leadership. I know that was a huge struggle for me, is can I enjoy the God I'm proclaiming to others? And so the question that's driving these next several episodes is, can I experience from God what I most deeply believe about God? Last week, we had Renee Loring on the show. Jimmy, you and Renee have worked together for years as well. But as you hear that question, can I experience from God what I most deeply believe about God, what's your immediate reaction to that?
Mm. So I'm a big Enneagram guru, so I'm probably going to go in that direction first. And to me, there's a thing called the holy ideas. And so when we disconnect from these holy ideas, that kind of informs the way that our personality develops. That's the theory there. And so when I hear that, this belief about God that you disconnect with, or for me, it's a disconnection with something that's true. And then my ego, the self that believes I'm supposed to be God when God isn't in control, tries to take over and fix it. And so it's this kind of cycle you can observe in yourself of a disconnection with one particular truth that almost like on autopilot, your self is trying to mend or fix or repair. And it has these really ineffectual tools to try and get that done.
So one example for you then, what would that look like? What would be the one thing that the holy idea for you?
Yeah, so for me is perfection. And so when I experience the lack of perfection, then my coping mechanisms are anger and resentment. It's like clockwork. And I somehow believe somewhere in there that just getting angry about it or being resentful is going to restore or repair or make things right. Of course, it never does. Mm. But for me, because I know that about myself, it is kind of like a warning mechanism of when you said, Lisa, it's the pain that makes you realize that you need to reach out to God for help or whatever. And that's it for me. That, I mean, it feels like it's built in or automatic, and I move so quickly to it that now I can use that as kind of like a warning signal that helps me get off a treadmill that I know where it's going to take me. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been on that road so many times that I know that the longer I stay on it, it's just going to be unnecessary wallowing and anger and resentment when there are other options available to me.
Yeah. When you talk about anger, I think I've recently learned from you, sometimes like a perfectionist like yourself, the anger is inward. Sometimes it's outward at others, like a blame. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it could be both. But different people are wired different ways.
Mm-hmm. So
you might run across a perfectionist in the workplace that almost all the anger is projected out and they're not really taking responsibility, for example.
Sure, yeah.
Where would you lay on that spectrum of internal, external, or both?
Yeah, best I can tell, I'm halfway. So it's half directed.
Yep.
Oh, good.
Which is, I think it's good though, because I have met some people where it's all, almost all of it is directed inwardly.
Yeah.
And so they kind of self-perfect or self-improve. And so those are the type of people that are super nice. You won't see them get angry because that's not the appropriate response. So they don't even allow themselves to get angry. It has to be a really righteous reason for you to see them get angry. And I'm way more free with other people seeing my anger.
I'm feeling myself begin to like seizure and trigger over here.
What's
with that.
You over there?
Yeah. I mean, I can so resonate with, it all would go inward. And then you even have to feel like you have to take care of how you're going to show up with your anger and then hide by being nice and kind.
It's
and
brutal.
All of that. Yeah, it's brutal.
But in the idea of holy ideas, perfection being yours, Lisa wouldn't be driven by perfection as much. Is that accurate?
If we're getting into Enneagram talk, then it would be a different holy idea. But that's what is so interesting and probably so divisive about the Enneagram is that it's a representative of the whole human experience.
Yes.
So nobody has a corner on any of the things. Yes. So when you hear a number being talked about and like whether it's anger, obviously all of us get angry.
Right.
And I share anger with, the ones, the nines, and the eights all have anger in them. Mm-hmm. And so it's really complicated, but what I find so, I guess, life-giving about the Enneagram is that it does, for me, give words to the common human experience. And so we all have different ways to relate to them, but there's this truth that resonates that you can kind of go, oh, I know what you're talking about, and I can relate. So,
So I don't think I would be as motivated by perfection. I'm fairly happy to do sloppy work. But I'd have a different holy idea though. What would be, it would be helpful to hear a couple of others, like peace. Is that one of them, for example?
So, peace you would think would be the nine, but actually it's love.
Okay.
It can get pretty complicated pretty quickly. So to try and stay at a 30,000 foot level, all the way around, you've got truth, love, perfection, will, hope, origin, transparency, faith, and plan.
Wow.
There's a lot of different words there. But what's really fascinating is I've been able to kind of explore this, not just by reading books, but actually have real life humans and get their response to how they feel and how they interpret the meaning they make of these things.
Yeah.
It is really fascinating how it can be a tool to help us unlock the thing that drives us.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of those things are things that we desire. They're good things, but some of us are a little bit more, I don't know if it's overly sensitive is the wrong word, but we're kind of focused on one more than the others. And it can really have an impact on the way that we show up on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, whatever we are driven by, a lot of your work is helping people see how they are stepping into God's seat instead of letting God be God.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, the simplest version of this is that everything was perfect in the Garden of Eden, and then the fall happened. And then in the biblical story, Jesus came to redeem and restore all things.
Yeah.
And there's all different reasons of why we step in instead, whether it's timing or the redemption wasn't to what we expected or wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But when we learned the difference between good and evil, there was a part of us that had a skill set of God without any of the other God-sized tools to kind of use those appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And so our ego kind of steps in and says, well, God, if you're not going to help, or in my case, God, if you're not going to fix this situation, I can. or, you know, for the ones that are pursuing truth or justice, if you're not going to make this situation right, I'll use my strength and do it. And what's really kind of nuanced about that is that these are usually really good things. They're good things that we've made ultimate things, or rather than kind of being invited into a story that God's inviting us into, we operate as if God is asleep at the wheel. Yes. And so we're going to do it instead. And that's usually what gets us so stuck.
Whether we could name it or not, it's almost like we're saying subconsciously or consciously, God's not doing a good enough job. Yeah. I'll take it from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Which the conclusion for me in perfection, unfortunately, is that if I were God, I would do it better.
Do it better than God's doing
which
it.
Which is, I mean, how right. terrible is
Even
that?
Even saying it now, yeah. you're like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
No, but I think we all can, regardless of Enneagram number, can relate to that, and that we take our skewed vision and assume that's the full vision of, and then we take a skewed problem solving, assuming that would fix all, and place that on God. And then let's throw an extra thing in there as Christian leaders, figure out how we have that going on in the background, but then stand up in front of people and protect God.
Right.
Right?
Go to bat
right.
for God. With,
yes, go to mm-hmm. bat for God when sometimes our own personal experience is different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting pretty complicated because a lot of our listeners like us are Christian leaders. Mm-hmm. And so when... are we going in on autopilot that's unhealthy? Mm-hmm. When are we partnering with God in a human-sized job? And then when are we just like opting out and saying, this is too hard, I'm just going to let God do it all?
Yeah.
I find it's hard to help people nuance between those three. So, Jimmy, I think it might help if we stayed on your example of perfection. So, okay, mm-hmm. God is perfect and you are not.
Right.
But, you know, last week's guest, Renee, was talking about functional theology. So if I'm taking her teaching, functionally you believe you have to be perfect?
Yeah, that it's my job to... So perfection is a word that us perfectionists actually are bothered by. We're,
right.
we're being perfectionistic about the word perfection.
I'm not saying perfectionism correctly.
Well, it's more... So I like to be called the reformer. You know, I like to improve or fix things, you know, because yes. perfection is not attainable, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I go about it saying I'm gifted in seeing, things that could be improved. Yeah. So blank sheet of paper, I'm usually terrible with, but you give me a drawing or a problem or a thing and I can take it and usually make it better. It's like my superpower, but not everything needs to be fixed. Not everybody needs to be fixed. Absolutely.
Not everybody wants to be fixed.
Yep. And of course, it puts me in the elitist seat of if I can fix it, that means I'm above or in a posture of, you know, reaching down to help a person or a problem. And there's all kinds of negative sides of that. But you were talking about how to figure out whether I'm in partnership with God, whether it's me on my own, or I'm so fed up with it, I just have to eject.
Yeah,
that's as I've been working with this, I've run into, you know, whether it's scripture that we're quoting to make ourselves feel better, it can be escapism sometimes. And so the best that I've figured out how to navigate with this is this Sabbath rhythm, to where I don't remember who I was listening to, but they were not just talking about the one day a week Sabbath, but more of a posture towards the rhythm in which we approach things.
Yeah.
So if you look at a fisherman who was trying to get their livelihood and then they needed to take Sabbath, it wasn't just rest. It was also trust that God would provide in 7 days what they worked to attain in six. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in the same way for me in fixing things, if I can choose to not fix or deliberately restrain myself as an exercise in trusting that God is still at work when I'm not picking up his slack is what it feels like sometimes. Then there's this reorientation that happens where we're still at work. It's not a eject to where I can't afford to care about the situation because it's so broken, but more of an invitation to use the gift, which I think is a gift of fixing, but under this framework that God is ultimately in control and is ultimately okay with the state of things to the extent that, you know, until he comes back again and does redeem and restore all things to perfection, there's some submission that has to happen in me for me to be balanced.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was in seminary, I had this wonderful Old Testament professor, Robert Owen, Bob Owen, Dr. Bob Owen. And we were at a seminary retreat together where he did morning devotions. And he was this crazy academic, kind of dry at times. He's the kind of academic that had an actual scroll. Like he had some of the Dead Sea Scroll because he was one of the people translating it. I remember in class one day, he rolls out this scroll. We're all nerding out.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But at the retreat at Lake Junaluska, those early retreats, he pulls out Winnie the Pooh and Genesis 1. And we're like weeping as he weaves Winnie the Pooh and Genesis 1. And his big idea was that Sabbath is fundamentally about control, not about rest.
Yeah.
Which is what you're getting. That's what it made me think of when I was hearing you. So if we get off the perfection treadmill, I'll confess, for me, you know, what makes me a moth to flame, it's some version of don't let that person down.
Mm.
And then what is heightened for me, I'd be interested what yours might be, Lisa, but if somebody comes to the church and says, the last three churches let me down, I can feel myself getting on a tightrope, that I have to walk on a tightrope of eggshells is what I call it.
Yeah,
I have to tread so carefully because, oh no, if I let them down, Armageddon's going to happen.
Yeah.
So that would be, like, I may not struggle with perfection, but that would be my version of just autopilot, just going on and on.
Well, and what you're doing is you're zooming out. So that if we're back to Enneagram, there's nine numbers, but then you can divide those into triads. And so you're describing one of the triads that's affection and esteem.
Yeah.
And so you're after, usually it's proving your own affection and esteem by your ability to be needed or wanted or desired by others. And so that's one of them, but then safety and security is one. And then power and control is the one I fit into. So a lot of my verbiage will be about, you know, remembering God's in control is what is my proclivity, you know, versus the...
Mine would be, remember I'm loved anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Or, you know, God's the one that's going to keep us safe or provide security. I mean, we all have all of them, but usually there's one that we're bent more towards than the others.
Yeah.
I think what's going through my mind is even just the word rest, in that we typically think of rest as stopping work or, and sometimes just not doing. And that, I mean, I remember I had a mentor that really challenged me, go through the Bible and just research the word rest and see what's surrounding it and what does it really mean. And in doing that, it helped me to look through, take scriptures and see what is on me to do and what is God's to do. And even like made a little graph. And in that, resting in God is mostly being alert and aware to look for God and trusting and staying kind of in community, communion with him, and also trusting that he's the one that's doing these things, that he's the one equipping me, that he is the one faithful in someone else's journey, and that there's an invitation to join, which is different than it's all on me.
Yeah.
But in my moments of stress, in my moments of not feeling connected at all, and rigidity, I think is where I would tend to go, that it's hard to operate out of that. And I feel like it is all on me, or I'm not enough in God.
Yeah.
I'm not enough as a human.
Well, and that's what anxiety does too, right? Is it polarizes things like that. It's either this or it's this. There's not a lot of both and that can be there.
Yeah.
And I love the reference to the list too, because it is another example of, I think that what we want, maybe not all of us want it. Some of us want it more than others. I'm one that wants certainty to the, that a list can bring. Like there's some black and whiteness to that, where I can put it in this column or I can put it in this column.
Yes.
And I was telling you, Steve, earlier, the analogy I was trying to come up with of this relationship, because it's not, it's difficult to describe sometimes. And so it's a broken analogy, but I was thinking of a wood saw.
Yeah.
And if you really bear down and try and use it, bear down too hard, then it can really seize up and get stuck. The teeth get stuck in the wood and it just stops.
Yeah. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can wear yourself out if you're using it wrong. And I'm not a woodworker. Maybe somebody listening would, you know, set me straight. But really, if you focus more on the motion forward and back, and let a little bit of gravity and a little of the saw do its work, mm-hmm. then it actually, it's still work. It still takes effort, but it is working the way it's designed. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that I think about this, of that it's not me or God, to where I just wait, be still, and know that I'm God. There's times for that, yes, but there's also this invitation for me to join me in the work. And I find myself grabbing the saw and just digging down really hard. And there's something to the loosening of the grip that just makes it work better.
Yeah,
I love where this conversation is going. Like, I think I'm processing in real time right now, but the idea that rest isn't removal from, mm-hmm. but it's relaxing into God's presence. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a phrase we use a lot,
yeah.
right? Like, we're going to invite you to relax into God's presence. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking in my own life, like, I think I preached at our home church 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was the week I was hosting an intensive. People had flown in, and intensives for me are really fun and really exhausting. And our preacher who was scheduled had an accident and was unable to preach, and I got the late call to preach. And I said to Zach, our lead pastor, and he was great, and I said, hey, I just want you to know I don't have really any time to prepare. And so I didn't. I just put 2 or 3 hours into the sermon. Mm. That's mortifying for me. Like that.
I'm taking a deep breath right now. Yes.
That sends the message to me, you have not done the work.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I've been honest, and Zach's like, I get it. I'm grateful someone's doing it. Mm. And the wood saw analogy, Jimmy, like to me, in some ways, you're the king of these analogies. That's exactly what it was. I'm like, well, I've done the best I can in this case. God, you can do more. And I was very relaxed preaching that sermon, just walked out, gave what I had to give. I personally did not think it was a particularly great sermon, mm-hmm. but I was completely relaxed. Mm-hmm. That would be a practical vision of what you're saying, Lisa, about rest. Mm-hmm. Rest wasn't sitting on the couch or even going out and walking my dog, which are great things. Mm-hmm. Rest was still being employed by the king. But I don't know how to finish that sentence.
Yeah, I just want to say sometimes it is actual rest,
sure.
right? Yeah,
yeah,
not to replace that.
That's a good, good catch.
Mm-hmm. But it is, I think that because of anxiety can make us move to all or nothing thinking. Mm-hmm. That analogy of this partnership is helpful for somebody like me that would be prone to saying, okay, it's time for me to work my tail off. Mm-hmm. And now it's time for me to completely disconnect.
Yes.
It's an all or nothing, to where the longevity is, when we talk about burnout, when we talk about the reason you said earlier, they don't leave it because of a job description, but because of the management.
Yeah. Mm.
It really is our own management of the way that we show up and approach things. And that's why the candle for me is such a impactful reminder, because it's so simple to remind me that it's the manner of which that I'm grabbing on with this white knuckle grip to try and control and make things as good as they can be. And I just dig those teeth into the wood and I seize up.
Yeah.
And it just happens to me over and over again.
I love the metaphor of the wood saw, because I've been the guy with the wood saw. I'm not particularly handy, but I've used a wood saw and a hacksaw. They both have the same problem.
Yeah.
That the more you try harder, the worse it gets. And then you get angry.
Yeah.
And then your solution is to dig in more.
Yeah.
Whereas once you relax and let the saw do its work and you do your work, it's almost effortless. You could almost saw all day.
Yeah.
It's quite a profound metaphor. Mm. So one of the other metaphors you have that has really helped me is you talk about people carrying an anvil above their head. Just give us a taste of that.
Yeah. This comes up a lot in the coaching work that I do, because inevitably we get into, what is it that you think you need to be okay? And one of the kind of direct ways to get at that quickly is name some of the people that make you really frustrated, or the type of people that you judge. And usually it's the other side of that coin of somebody, like in my case, I value timeliness. And so people that can't get their act together and show up on time really drive me nuts. Yeah. And really what that says is less about them and more about me, that I'm just driven by this need to be responsible, maybe is the word. And the thing is that these are good things, usually.
Yeah, being responsible is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so you don't just throw it away. You don't just say, well, I'm going to just, in the name of freedom, I'm going to stop being.
I'm going to be a pot-smoking hippie.
You know, whatever it is. Yeah. But what I found is that we kind of have this anvil that's over our head, and it's filled with these things that can be really heavy. We don't notice they're heavy because we've gotten so used to carrying them. And they become really heavy when we see other people who seem to not be burdened by that same thing. So I get angry at the person that's not on time because I'm like, how can you be so cavalier about other people's, you know, schedules, or you're inconsiderate. I can fill in the gap with a lot of things.
Aren't there two kinds of people that are not on time? There's the people who are not on time and are sorry, and then there's the people who are not on time and don't seem to care.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and so what I've learned to notice is that, you know, when something like that comes up that makes me angry, I then take a look at, well, man, what energy is it taking me to carry that on a daily basis? And what's really interesting is that the things that are in each of our anvils change, but the reaction is almost always the same. And when I invite people to maybe approach said thing that was a good thing that we've made an ultimate thing, to just remove it, put it back down to a good thing, something you still pursue, but maybe not to the extent that it just wears you out. And it's always, no, I can never do that. Slippery slope type language of I'll become like the people who I can't stand. Or back to our conversation of, you know, what happens, like, why would I intentionally not fix, for instance, if fixing was my thing, why would I intentionally not fix something that I can fix? That feels like it doesn't compute. But when you start to realize the weight that this has on, if I don't fix, then I feel worthless, right?
And the anvil will come crashing down.
Yeah, it does. Or like I've started using Atlas instead of the anvil of the poor guy who was tasked with keeping the heavens up. It feels like that. It feels like if I don't do my job, then Armageddon's coming usually. And it's really interesting to see reactions of, I could never do that because X, Y, and Z will happen. Mm. And it's that same binary thinking of that there's this reluctance to figure out a third way of continuing to saw, but doing it in a little bit more relaxed posture. It's like this thing that's stuck in my head. It's like, no, I need to get this thing built by the end of the day. And I just got to bear down. And this really is the best way. When from a zoomed out perspective, it's like, man, that's going to take you four times as long to do it that way. You're going to break the teeth off your saw, so on and so forth. Yeah. So,
I'm feeling a little bit like I want to stand up for the people who might not always be on time.
Super
prompt.
Yes. And that for those people like me who might tend to run 5 or 10 minutes late, the reason is why, right? And it's usually because there's a value of getting something else done right before you go.
Absolutely.
You know, and often it's for someone else, you know, and it's interesting how I think all of those values that we hold, whether they're personality driven or the way we were brought up or the way we interpret we should be to be a good person or a follower of Christ or whatever, that we also we tend, and I do too, to get rigid with them.
Yes.
So that whatever my values are or whatever I feel honored by is actually a desire of mine. Right? It's a desire. And where the dangerous part is when we place it on other people of expectations of how they must be. And we live that out. That becomes,
It's such an important word because I remember when you were pregnant with Bryson and we had to choose a OBGYN.
Right.
And the lady we went with, all of her patients, we were in a small town, people knew each other. They told us she is chronically late, like hours late. You'll make an appointment, it'll be an hour and a half, 2 hours later. But what she will do is take all the time you need for as long as you need, thus she's late. Mm-hmm. And that was true. We would sit sometimes in the waiting room for an hour and a half, 2 hours. But when we were with her, we were all that mattered. Well, really, you were all that mattered. I was definitely spare parts in her mind. But still, but I think what we're getting at here is a path to freedom is to pay attention to your overreaction when someone violates a value, right? So that was what's going on here is we're the prompt people. Lisa's saying, let's hear it for the present people.
Let's just bring a little balance.
That's
to the present people.
Which is completely legitimate. We don't feel...
And sometimes you're responsible. I mean, let's name that too. Yes.
Sure. I mean, but that's the beauty of the body of Christ, right? Is it we are all wired differently and it's not a lowering of the bar to kind of... put it to where, well, oh, because you're that way, this is the expectation. The expectation actually doesn't need to change, but the pathway towards hitting that expectation mm-hmm. looks totally different for almost everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the key here is if our listeners could notice their overreaction to something that quite frankly doesn't matter as much as we thought it
That's
did.
It, right? Yeah, that's it, right? Yes.
Yep. And I've had to work on that, Jimmy, right? Like I'm famous for, I remember having an employee late in my leadership who was chronically late and pulling him aside and saying, that will never work here just because of the way I'll get so angry at you. It's right. ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And actually turned him into a prompt person. I was quite proud of that through my anxiety. So it's all good. But yeah, what we're encouraging people to do is notice when someone violates something that's really important to you, your overreaction is saying something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're inviting us to do is to notice that overreaction because there's an anvil above your head or there's the world on your shoulders mm-hmm. and then to pay attention to what is your solution now. And so like if you're responsible, it might be that someone's irresponsible. That only makes you feel like, well, I better be even more responsible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a vicious cycle. And that's where the whole, it keeps coming back to the either or thinking. It's not, you know, when you're trying to represent Lisa, you know, the other you know, side of the circle, right? You know, right. It feels like the other side to some degree, but it really isn't that it's cut not. And dry, right? Yes. It's way more nuanced or complicated. And so it really is about paying attention to those things so you can figure out what you have control of or what has control of you, I think is what it is. And so when you find that these things, they're idols, you sacrifice to them. You sacrifice energy and time. And it really is this assessment of what are my deepest held beliefs, and you tend to find that these are kind of automatically deeper somehow. They're almost like, no, I believe that God's in control. However, like when Renee was talking about last week, of this, the way that I show up would lead others to believe that, no, actually, I don't show up as if I believe that's true. But the way that I behave, it seems to think that, no, I'm in control. Right? Or it's up to me or whatever the end of that sentence looks like.
I love what you said earlier in this episode is it's quite funny to say it out loud, but I do think we all believe it, is God needs my help. In fact, God needs to step aside so I can do it properly.
Yes.
And so for our listeners to pay attention to that, the other big theme that we've been kicking around today is what is rest? And yeah, I love the corrective that rest can be walking the dog, getting into the mountains, taking a break. Mm-hmm. But we're also adding to the definition of rest, releasing control right. as a pathway to relax into God's presence. And so, Jimmy, just as we go to a little brain break, we'd just like to play a little music for folks to have a think. Just to go back to your idea of Sabbath is 1 out of 7 times not doing that autopilot thing. Like a lot of what we teach people is you'll never get this perfectly right, but if you can do it 1 out of 10, 1 out of 20. So the challenge is if you're a perfectionist, if you need to be there for people, whatever drives you that is also driving you, just 1 out of 7 times this week, maybe step off that treadmill. Mm. That's what we're encouraging people to do. In 2018, when we launched the podcast, I wanted to do a playful and serious thing called the Gauntlet of Anxiety Questions. And now we're almost 5 years in. We have 21 gauntlet questions now.
Woo!
I try to change them up each season. And Jimmy, I'm just going to throw one at you rather than putting you through a whole gauntlet because you've been living this for years. But this season, we are focusing on freedom in Christ. Mm-hmm. I think I'm focusing on it because I think it's something we believe in our brain, but we don't know how to always experience in our body. So just the one gauntlet question for you. When in the last few weeks have you felt completely free, and what were you doing or who were you with? What was going on?
Hmm. Yeah, so in my backyard, once it gets past 12:30, then there's shade in my backyard. And so I was on my back porch out of direct sunlight. The temperature was between 60 and 70, which I have learned to understand that as my ideal temperature. Mm-hmm. And then there was a little bit of a breeze blowing. And so I think that that's what I believe heaven's going to be like, is just every day is going to be between 60 and 70. The sun won't be making things too hot and there will be a breeze. And for whatever reason, I know it's very particular, that's so good. Right? Mm-hmm. But it's something that is, I don't rest well, I think is part of, as we were talking about this, it was something that reminded me that I, you know, you can enjoy those things irrespective to how well you did today. Mm-hmm. That the wind, you know, God says that he sends the rain and to the righteous and the unrighteous alike. And it's this enjoyment of weather that everybody that was in that place, you know, if they're out of the sun, they're within, however, I don't know how far, it's 60 to 70 degrees, that area, you know, they had the opportunity to experience the love of God at the same moment that I did. And I miss it all the time, but when I can pay attention to it, yeah, so I was by myself, I didn't have anything that I needed to accomplish after that, maybe, I don't know. But the point is that I was paying attention to just one of those gifts that God freely gives.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah.
It also playfully reminds me of Miscongeniality, which has become a favorite quote in the Cuss family. There's a scene in Miscongeniality.
Yeah, I see how you got there.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Well, I think...
Well, Jimmy is Miscongeniality. Yeah, right. Well done. Yeah.
Where it's a beauty pageant. Yes. And the host is interviewing this girl, and he says to her, please describe a perfect date. And she says boldly, April 25th. Not too hot, not too cold, just wear a light jacket.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a great quote. We've said it around the Cuss family a lot.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, folks, as we wrap up this episode, just a reminder that this topic is so important to us that we've decided to host a conference that is purely covering the gap between what we believe about God in our head and what we experience from God in our lives. And we'll be looking at the gaps around God's love. So for those of you who struggle to experience viscerally the love of God, that was me for years. God's presence. Those of you who believe God is with you, but you really struggle to notice God in the moment. A lot of our episode today really was addressing that. But also things like the peace of Christ. Like, why is it we're promised peace, but we don't feel at peace? Freedom in Christ. How can we actually experience freedom? And so this conference is uniquely designed to help us unlock the things that are blocking faith. October 2nd through 4th, you can join us on here in person in Colorado, or you can join us online, either streaming, or you can catch us later on demand. CapableLife.me is where you get tickets. The conference is sneaking up on us. Jimmy, anything in particular as you think about the conference that excites you?
I mean, it feels lame to say the general focus on the gap. I mean, I just think that it's something that's so worth focusing on. Yeah. Something I think we're afraid to talk about because of the implications that if I feel this way, what does that mean about truth or reality? And just a place, a safe place where you can kind of wade into those waters knowing that other people feel the same way, I think is really encouraging.
Yeah. So Jimmy, you'll be one of our keynote speakers. Lisa, you'll be one of our keynote speakers. And I've learned so much from you about attachment, not just with our kids, but with God and parts of self. Like, you've taught me how to notice the different parts inside me that get activated. You'll be teaching us on some of those things.
Yeah. Some of parts of self, looking at the different ways that we hide, looking at being found and the fear and the thrill of that all at once. But with all of our speakers and with our musical guests, Jill Phillips and Andy Gullihorn, and then some other ideas that we have, we're really hoping to provide a space where you can think and sense through the love of Christ.
Right. That's where you've been such a gift to me, is I'm a brain on a stick sometimes. And just the idea of being
able to... I have this awful image of a hot dog on a stick and just your brain on a stick. That's funny.
Yeah. I know how to woo you.
Yes, you sure do.
Yeah. But just the idea of integrating faith into my body and feeling free has been life-changing. So, yeah, capablelife.me, guys, if you're wanting to be part of it, now's the time to grab a ticket. Jimmy, thanks for joining us on the show. You'll be back again this season.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it.
And we'll see everyone next week.
For more resources, visit stevecusswords.com or missyoualliance.org.